It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. In the last few years, businesses have found themselves defending a series of class action lawsuits out of Illinois over the privacy of biometric information.
Recently, the Supreme Court in the state of Illinois has allowed a lawsuit to go forward against Six Flags for allegedly violating state biometric laws by collecting the fingerprints of people who come into their parks.
Many Illinois residents should start seeing their settlement checks from a class action lawsuit filed against Facebook. The company violated the state's biometric privacy law.
Snapchat reaches a $35 million settlement in Illinois for a biometric privacy class action suit. The lawsuit accused Snapchat of collecting user info and then keeping it without consent.
In order, that was Farron Cousins with the Young Turks in February 2019, Ray Cortopassi with WGN-TV last year, and Anthony Ponce with WFLD-TV in Chicago, also last year. Businesses are paying real money to settle these lawsuits. TikTok users in Illinois are sharing in a $92 million settlement against that app. Google agreed to pay $100 million to settle a suit involving facial recognition in Google Photos. And as you heard, more than a million Illinois Facebook users have gotten checks worth hundreds of dollars each out of a $650 million settlement in a case involving that site's facial scanning. It's worth noting that none of the companies involved in the lawsuits I just mentioned have admitted fault. Those lawsuits have been happening because of an Illinois law called the Biometric Information Privacy Act. That's BIPA for short. In 2008, it passed both chambers of the Illinois legislature without opposition. The law sets standards for how companies handle the biometric information of Illinois consumers. It prevents companies from selling or profiting off of that data, and it allows residents to take businesses that have violated the law to court. Illinois business groups have supported efforts to change the law. One such proposal a couple years ago would have set a statute of limitations to file lawsuits over violations, among other changes. None of that legislation has been approved by the legislature. And just last week, the Illinois Supreme Court ruled in a case that people have up to 5 years to file lawsuits for alleged privacy violations. The defendant in that case, supported by many businesses, had wanted a one-year statute of limitations. Last year on the program, we talked about Illinois' BIPA law and what it meant for Illinois residents and businesses. In light of the Illinois Supreme Court decision, we thought we'd revisit that conversation today. Because we're on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, let's begin by introducing our guests. Joining us now to talk about BIPA and what it means for Illinois residents and businesses is Ed Yonka, Director of Communications and Public Policy at the ACLU of Illinois, which led an initiative to get BIPA passed in 2008. Ed, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Brian, thank you. It's great to be with you.
And Brad Teets is Vice President of Government Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, which has supported efforts to update BIPA, to change BIPA. Brad, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me today.
And I also want to welcome Dr. Meg Lita Jones to the 21st Show. Dr. Jones is a communication, culture, and technology associate professor at Georgetown University, also a graduate of the University of Illinois College of Law in Urbana-Champaign. Meg, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ed, I'm going to start with you, and let's just go over the basics. What exactly is meant by biometric information?
You know, biometric information includes your retina or iris scans, fingerprints, voice prints, hand scans, facial geometry, DNA, or any other unique biometric or biological information about oneself that we can't alter. So that's how it's defined in BIPA.
And from your experience, what do people understand or maybe misunderstand about just what that information is?
You know, I think this really gets to the heart of a lot of this discussion, Brian. I think the thing is that people understand what that information is. And I think there's a general recognition on the part of residents of Illinois that's the kind of information about ourselves that we want to protect. We want to protect our privacy. We want to protect that information from being monetized by others. I think the thing that's been missing is really sort of the simple, straightforward nature of the law. The law really requires just three things. It requires a company to inform someone in writing what data of theirs is being collected. It requires them, again, to inform them of the specific purpose and use for which the data is being collected and how long, for example, it would be stored and used, and then to obtain a written consent from the user before using the biometric information. So this isn't something that says you can never do this. This is not something that says, you know, no one can ever use this biometric information for the kinds of conveniences that people want to offer. It simply says there are simple steps that you have to undertake. And I think, you know, after 14 years, I think some of what you heard at the beginning is really a sense on the part of many companies that they can simply violate this law and not be held accountable for that action.
So, Meg, can you talk in a general way about notions of digital privacy and consent and how it factors into the Illinois law?
Sure. I could not agree more with Ed that one of the great things about BIPA is its simplicity. Oftentimes, data protection laws and privacy laws are really, really complicated, and they have to do with like risk assessments and all of these obligations that that data holders are supposed to undertake. And BIPA is sort of beautiful in its simplicity, and it relies on consent, and it has a pretty high standard for consent relative to what we see in other privacy laws, which often, you know, opt-out consent works, which is like you have to uncheck the box. And I don't think very many people consider that real consent. BIPA really means business when it comes to consent. They want affirmative, informed consent from people who are giving up biometric data that identifies them based on their body features.
You know, it's been called one of the strongest laws of its kind in the U.S. Meg, does that still hold true? Do you accept that interpretation of it, or characterization, I should say?
I do, and it really is interesting because consent remains a bit of a flimsy mechanism for governing data, but BIPA is a great example of how this simple baseline of real consent and allowing people to sue when their consent is not obtained can drive meaningful change in the way that technology is developed and deployed across different aspects of society.
Meg, have you seen it? I wonder if it's influenced the way the Illinois law has influenced the development of technology, right? Like maybe, because this passed, what did I say, 2008, I think. That's before there were fingerprint readers on iPhones and Apple devices and smartphones, and before there was facial recognition technology on, you know, in everybody's pocket. Do you see the Illinois law having influenced how that technology and software was developed?
You know, my biggest question around BIPA is why doesn't every state have a BIPA? I think it would if it was embraced, and we're seeing real consent required for sensitive information, including biometric information. We're seeing that aspect of the law being included in federal bills. And so I think it certainly has driven the conversation, and it has changed technology as it's been designed and used in Illinois, which has changed. Some of the applications have just been killed because of BIPA. And Clearview AI, you know, one of the great quotes that I've seen after they faced off with BIPA was that, you know, they were going to pivot basically away from using their massive database of facial recognition in a lot of different ways. So I think it is absolutely changing the technology as it's deployed. And I think that the more that states and federal legislation mimics BIPA, the more that it will drive technological change. I do not love that my, you know, that Apple products still have these kind of default biometric systems, but I think that will change.
Okay, well, we're going to come back to that because there's obviously a trade-off in convenience and everything else. Let me just take a moment to remind listeners, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we were just hearing from Professor Meg Lita-Jones from Georgetown University, and we've also been speaking with Ed Yonka from the ACLU of Illinois, and I want to bring into the conversation Brad Teets with the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. And Brad, from the perspective of business, what problems has BIPA created?
Well, I think it's important, and Brian, thanks again for having me on. I think it's important to take a step back and kind of look at, you know, the facts on the ground and what's actually transpired. So, as you noted, BIPA went into effect in 08. Not one single lawsuit occurred from 08 to 2015. From 2015 to 2019, right around the time that the Rosenbach v. Six Flags decision came down, there were 173 class action lawsuits filed. Since that Supreme Court case came down, the ruling came down, there has been over 1,200 class action lawsuits filed, increasingly against small and mid-sized businesses. So of the numbers right here, 697 pending cases right now, 46.7% of those are against employers of 500 or less employees. So this is not, you know, just an issue of TikTok and Snapchat. This is manufacturers, small retailers, hospitals, nursing homes, nonprofits, you know, restaurants across the board who are facing lawsuits under this act. And in many cases, they're crippling. I have many manufacturers in the Chicagoland area, $3 to $4 million settlements, and these aren't big companies. So, you know, that's transpired. And what have we done? We've introduced legislation in House Bill 559 2 years ago, and then last year, Senate Bill 3874 and 4692 to provide reasonable, reforms to the act. Nothing that is earth-shattering, nor would it impact those cases such as those being filed against Snapchat or TikTok. So, you know, 23 different groups signed on to a letter urging reforms of the act. And I would mention too, in the past two legislative sessions, 2021 and 2022, 17 bills have been filed in the Illinois General Assembly from all four caucuses, House Republicans, Senate Democrats, and House Democrats. So legislators across the board are hearing it from businesses, nonprofits, nursing homes in their districts about the need for just reasonable reform. And again, all we're asking for, you know, again, on the Snapchat and TikTok front, that we need to distinguish between those cases and between those of timekeeping and HR related situations, for instance. So under the act,
let's come back to what some of the, I want to come back a little later to what some of the specific legislation would do, but I think that's the natural question is, you know, if the law says this, why aren't these businesses following the law? Or maybe their timekeeping machine vendor. Why isn't that company just following the law?
I'll give you a quick and easy answer. The law has been weaponized by a special set of attorneys to really go after increasingly small and mid-sized businesses.
Ed Yonka, do you want to respond to any of those points?
Yeah, I do. And thanks. And I think Brad raises an issue which really we do need to confront, which is there are multiple businesses across Illinois that continue to violate this law 14 years after. And what many people have asked is that everyone in Illinois sacrifice their privacy and access to their biometric information and the laws and the bills that Brad references would go, we believe, far beyond just the mom and pop operations because these companies still fail to comply by the law. A couple of simple things here, Brian. Number one, there is equipment that is still being sold in Illinois today, 14 years after that law. And apparently the manufacturers and marketers of this equipment don't notify the people to whom they're selling this equipment that these are steps that they need to take in order to comply with Illinois law. Secondly, in the case of, say, fingerprint IDs for employees, every single one of those employees is onboarded into a corporation and have that there's a time period where they go through signing all kinds of paperwork in which consent could be transmitted, it could be gathered and done. What we need here is more education, not an alteration or gutting of this law. I think that these examples we're hearing about, you know, cry out for us. And we've always said we stand willing to work with the Chamber of Commerce or any group to do that education across the state of Illinois, because we think protecting privacy is so critical.
Meg, we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. But before we do, can you just put the sort of enforcement mechanism here at play? This is not a fine from the, you know, state department of whatever that would enforce this. It does allow for these class action lawsuits. Is that a common enforcement mechanism for this sort of regulation or law?
It's not. And it's one of the most controversial aspects of privacy legislation is including that private right of action because of exactly what Brad just said. Hungry lawyers will use this law and get a payday as a means to enforce it.
And that's and maybe we should just mention that Rosenbach decision that's come up a couple of times now. That was, I think, against Six Flags Great America. There was somebody who was maybe underage at the time, and I guess you had to do a fingerprint scan in order to sort of, instead of just having a ticket like some of us of the older generations might have had, or a wristband or something like that, they've gone high tech, and apparently that information was captured without consent, is my basic understanding of the case. All right, we can talk more about that and other aspects of Illinois' biometric privacy law when we return. This is the 21st show. We're speaking with Meg Lita Jones from Georgetown University, Brad Teets with the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, and Ed Yonka from the ACLU of Illinois. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for the rest of the program today, we're revisiting our conversation from last year on Illinois' Biometric Information Privacy Act, known as BIPA. This safeguards Illinoisans' biometric information, fingerprints, facial scans, that sort of things. But it also has led to Illinoisans to miss out on some of the latest whiz-bang technology. I got one of those doorbell cameras a few years ago, and there's some fine print on the side of the box that said something along the lines of, "Not all features available in Illinois." We spoke about this with Ed Yonka, Director of Communications and Public Policy at the ACLU of Illinois, which led an initiative to get BIPA passed back in 2008. Also Brad Teets, Vice President of Government Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, which has supported efforts to reform BIPA. And Dr. Meg Lita Jones, Communication Culture and Technology Associate Professor at Georgetown University, also a graduate of the U of I College of Law in Urbana-Champaign. Because our show's on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Meg, let's talk about these social media companies. Snapchat, Facebook, they frame themselves as, you know, they're in the business of connecting people. But, you know, I think of that quote from Jerron Lanier, who said, "If you're not paying for a service, you're not the customer, you're the product." So can you talk about that, you know, what they're actually doing with data and potentially biometric data?
Yeah, of course. The data that is collected on a social media site is combined with all of the data that is gathered from all of the other places that you go on the web, often offline data, data that's gathered through your phone, your credit card companies, and data companies use that basically to target information at you. That could be commercial information, political information, health information. Biometric data on social media is generally used for this photo application. It's essentially used to find your pictures of you or your friends so that you can be tagged. It's often automatic. So if you have an iPhone and you use Apple Photos, you can't turn it off. And for people who have kids, for instance, or have gone through, say, a transgender transition, it can be really off-putting to when you keep seeing these squares that sort of say, you know, this person and this name, when they feel quite vulnerable. So that's one of the areas that BIPA has been able to intervene in.
Oh, that's interesting. Say more about that. So, I mean, through the lens of gender, race, sexuality, disability, is there, you know, sort of a, what would you say, heightened vulnerability for certain people?
Yeah, of course. So anytime you're talking about technology, we're talking about basically the same vulnerabilities that we see everywhere. Children, those that are vulnerable to gender violence, domestic violence, stalking. You can imagine biometric databases. For instance, there are biometric databases that run facial recognition that you can just get a subscription to. So you can just buy a subscription to this and upload a photo of someone, let's say a child, and it will return pictures. And so you can imagine if you are subject to domestic violence, if you fled domestic violence, this really isn't something that serves your best interests. Children can be certainly made very vulnerable by images of themselves that are put on the web. But we see this when we think about being able to identify pregnant women based on facial changes or gait analysis. You can imagine how those that data is newly vulnerable in different places.
Gait analysis, how people walk. You have read a
right.
lot about that. Weird. Weird times we're living in. Brad, let me ask you. So what are some of the things that you and your organization and your allied organizations would like to see changed about the Illinois law?
Sure. And let me, you know, just say for the record, you know, again, I do want to make this distinction between the, you know, employment specific situations and those where it is dealing with facial recognition, et cetera. Look, I mean, you know, I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I, you know, I don't feel comfortable with that information being captured and kept. So, but again, it gets back to this idea of we need to differentiate between these two, you know, different things. And I'll give you an example of one thing that we pushed for 2 years ago, a 30-day notice and cure, but only in the context of employment. So the employer or the entity is made aware of the alleged violation, they have 30 days to cure it. But again, that only applies in cases of technical violations of the act. And if you recall, or if you, you know, remember, you know, the act already prohibits the trade or sale or profiting of this information. So that's already an illegal thing. And that was already in the Snapchat case, that was one of the things. But to get to your question, you know, we're looking for either a some kind of notice and cure period, again, only for those employment specific situations, or limited exemptions around timekeeping, HR material, as well as security exemptions. So employers can actually keep their employees safe. You know, there are a number of products, Brian, that you alluded to that simply can't enter or won't enter the Illinois market right now because of fear of BIPA. And some of that is, you know, some of these cameras and whatnot that would help keep facilities safe and, you know, or around organized retail theft, et cetera. So we put out the bill. Again, we had bipartisan co-sponsorship. So there is support on both sides of the aisle, but we're open to any and everything on this topic. And what we've been asking for is a conversation. Opponents of BIPA reform have you know, thus far failed to give that to us.
Ed, I think your name was sort of sub-mentioned in debate there, so to speak. So what do you think about that? What are your concerns about some of the things that you've seen coming up in the legislation that's been proposed to change BIPA?
Well, I think first of all, Brian, is just to reiterate what I said before, this is a law that has been in place for 14 years. And the folks that Mr. Teets identified as being the ones that they want to exempt are actually the ones that have the most access and captive access to the people whose biometric information is being gathered. If someone is an employee, you have access to that person. You share with them your policies. And again, we believe with a vigorous education campaign, there would be a way to make clear what is required under the law in order to simply provide the notice in writing and get written consent from people in order to do that. But I want to also go back to, you know, what Dr. Jones said, because I think it was really important. You know, in the lawsuit that the ACLU was part of against Clearview AI for the violation of BIPA, one of the plaintiffs that we represented in that lawsuit, or a set of plaintiffs that we represented in that lawsuit, were people who work with survivors of domestic violence who had, you know, stories of the way in which, you know, a Clearview or Clearview-like system is used to track people who have survived sexual or domestic violence. And I think, again, kind of pulling away at the undergirding of this law, instead of building on it and trying to see what we can do, is just the wrong direction to go. The last thing I'll say is, you know, Dr. Jones stole my line, because literally this ought to be the law in all 50 states, not just the state of Illinois. And one of the things is that Illinois has consistently been a leader in protecting personal privacy in a whole range of different ways. And I think to turn backwards on that now, and you know, the truth is, to turn backwards on that now under pressure from these large conglomerates who seek to monetize people's biometric information would really be a mistake, when we can help small businesses in Illinois simply by doing the education piece.
Let me just take one more opportunity to remind listeners, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're hearing from Ed Yonka, Director of Communications and Public Policy at the ACLU of Illinois, Meg Lita Jones, professor at Georgetown, who specializes in these areas, and Brad Teets, Vice President of Government Relations for the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. We're talking about BIPA, Illinois' Biometric Information Privacy Law. Only about 5 minutes left in our conversation, so we have to keep things brief. But Meg, where do you see the law sort of long term? What do you think the effects of BIPA will be? Do you see this spreading? Do you see it checked in Illinois?
I think it will spread. I think that one of the challenges with consent-based systems is that they have to account for the fact that it's pretty easy to get consent, even written consent, if you make it a condition to employment or riding a Six Flags roller coaster. And so one of the things that I'd like to see, and I think we do see in some of the later iterations of bills that are based on BIPA, is that the service and employment can't necessarily be based on that unless it's got some special conditions. So that's one aspect. How do you deal with real consent, making it so that people aren't like, well, I kind of have to say yes to this because I need money, or I need water, or I need electricity. I need Netflix. I don't know.
I need to unlock my iPhone. How about that?
Yeah, and to unlock my iPhone. Yeah, I need this iPhone. And the second piece is, as we think about biometric data, as it relates to other people. So if giving away your biometric data somehow makes other people vulnerable, so we see this in genetic data. If my parents or siblings upload their genetic 23andMe profile, it exposes me and my data without my consent. And so that is also kind of an inherent part of biometric data in general. BIPA is really great because, at least at this point, none of the biometric identifiers it has listed do actually point to your relative. So there's no facial recognition claims that I'm aware of that will say, hey, identify your possible siblings based on your facial features, and fingerprints can't do that either. So it's nice and tight, but I think as we see these types of bills grow, those are the two elements that you're going to see legislators really wrestle with.
Brad, just less than a minute left. Parting thoughts?
Yeah, a couple points I'd like to quickly respond to. One, if we're talking about, you know, vulnerable populations, you have safety net hospitals, the Salvation Army, nursing homes, the Council for Jewish Elderly Health and Rehabilitation Center. You know, if they're getting hit with multi-million dollar lawsuits, they're going to struggle to provide services to their customers as well. To Ed's point about education and awareness, we actually put in our bill, the Department of Labor shall include in their handbooks information on BIPA. So we agree, you know, with the idea that there needs to be more education and awareness. What we can't have is over the next 3 to 4 years, while we work with our members and other businesses to get in compliance, you know, multi-million dollar lawsuits crippling these businesses, particularly as inflation, everything else we're aware of is happening. So that's where we're at. Again, all we're asking for is a conversation. We're open to any and all suggestions, but we can't keep damaging Illinois' business climate like this with laws like BIPA. Other states, you know, most of them allow enforcement through their attorney general office or Department of Labor. All we're asking for is that Illinois moves in that direction.
And we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank my guests today. They have been Brad Teets with the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, Professor Meg Lita-Jones from Georgetown, and an alum at the University of Illinois College of Law, and Ed Yonka from the ACLU of Illinois. Ed, Brad, Meg, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian.
And that's all the time we have for our program today. As a reminder, the State of the Union address is at 8 p.m. this evening, Illinois time. You can catch it on most, if not all, NPR stations where you are hearing our program today. Coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, we'll be talking with Black police officers about the challenges they face in policing members of their own community, particularly in light of the killing of Tyree Nichols in Memphis, Tennessee. He was a Black man who died after being beaten by at least 5 Black police officers. We'll be having that conversation tomorrow. Plus, we'll talk with the author of a study who's documented an alarming rise in the number of children being poisoned after eating mom and dad's cannabis edibles, gummy edibles that are made to look like candy but are actually contain cannabis. That conversation is coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering come from Jason Croft and Steve Mork, and Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can get a podcast of our program by going to 21stshow.org. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.